Hello, everybody. I'm Radio Johnny, along with Denise Miller, and you are listening to Recovery Radio on KRFP 90.3 FM in Moscow Pullman. Recovery Radio is an outreach of the Latah and Whitman Recovery Community Centers. You can find them on the web at latahrecoverycenter.org and on Facebook. The Latah Recovery Community Center is located at 531 South Main Street in Moscow. You can contact the LRCC by phone at 208-883-1045 or by email at latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Whitman Recovery Community Center is located at 226 East Main Street in Pullman, and you can contact the WRCC by phone at 509-715-1111 or by email at wrccprogrammanager@gmail.com. Their hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday. And Recovery Radio's purpose is to share with our community how addiction and behavioral health disorders affect us all and how we deal with them. We also share the personal stories of people in and around recovery, highlighting their experience, insight, and hope for continued recovery. And like I said earlier, I am Radio Johnny, and she is Denise. Hi, Denise.
Hello, Johnny. Hello, everyone. Thank you for listening today.
Yes, and happy Thanksgiving to everyone.
Yes.
So anyone who's
good holiday.
Yeah, listening to the radio at 1 o'clock on Thanksgiving and foregoing a football game or something, we appreciate it.
Yep, and I probably have more to say about Thanksgiving here in a little bit, but we'll do this first.
Sure, absolutely. Today, our topic is we're going to talk about NAMI's. NAMI is an acronym for National Alliance on Mental Illness. We're going to talk about their five pillars of recovery and kind of talk about how it relates not only to mental health recovery, but even, you know, addiction recovery and stuff. Because, you know, addiction, I find, rarely do I see people who are in recovery from alcoholism that they don't have some sort of mental health issue co-occurring with it, whether it be trauma, which is a real common one, to actual, you know, chemical imbalances in the brain, bipolar disorder, schizoaffective disorder, a whole slew of different potential disorders that screw our brain chemistry up and feed into addiction. So anyway, I think they coexist with a pretty reasonable crossover.
Yeah, I was going to say it comes to mind that I've definitely run into and talked with people who talk about how they will try substances or drinking to be able to manage their mental health, that sometimes that can help and sometimes it makes it worse.
Right.
Well, yeah.
A good friend of mine, during his drinking days, his sister, who had gotten sober before him, was aware of his mental health issues. Oh, our friend Jay, I think he even spoke about this when he was in here.
Yeah.
Where his sister pointed out to him that if you drink, those mental health meds won't work.
Right. Yeah, that's the thing is typically it's pretty problematic.
Yeah, exactly. And can be, depending on the medication, it can be deadly. So yeah, you gotta be aware of those things. But on here, on to NAMI's five pillars of recovery. The first one they point out is basic stability. This foundational pillar includes accepting clinical support like therapy, non-clinical support, friends and family, and maintaining life structure like a job or school. And that all makes perfect sense to me. When I was suffering with clinical depression, part of it involved my work environment. So I had to make adjustments in how I looked at and felt about work. And that was a real important job for the therapist to help me with, because I couldn't just abandon my job. Would have been great, but starving is
other problems would have arose.
Right. Not a good option. So that makes a lot of sense to me. And clinical support for all sorts of things. it's tough to get people into it because who wants to admit they need that kind of help? Years ago, there was such a stigma put on going and getting therapy or counseling, seeing a psychiatrist. I mean, you had to be, quote, crazy to do something like that. Mm-hmm. Turns out, even people who seem healthy and well-adjusted have been able to use therapy mm-hmm. to their advantage.
Yes.
Just making improvements to their lives.
Absolutely. Yeah, because the alternative sometimes of not going to a counselor or a therapist can turn into relational problems or making choices in your life with substances or drinking because you just can't handle it anymore. So really, it's a sign of strength.
Right.
Good self-awareness. Yeah.
Right.
Knowing that something's wrong. And I'd also just like to throw in there that, you know, counselors and therapists and the doctors and stuff, they've been schooled, they've been working with people for quite some time, I'm sure, and they know what they're doing. And a lot of times, I think when we're in the middle of something, it can be harder to see things clearly, and to have someone sit with you and sort those things out can be very helpful. You know, that could be everything from doing that with a counselor or a therapist to sitting with a friend or a family member. Because, I mean, speaking for myself, sometimes I can't really see things as logical as someone else can that right. cares about me.
Yeah, not being able to see the forest for the trees.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes emotions clouded a little.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, emotions clouded a lot. I have a friend who will get into kind of a kerfuffle of multiple things coming down at once, and not necessarily even bad things, just a lot of stuff that needs to be looked at or tended
yeah,
to,
yeah.
and it causes them great anxiety to a point of paralysis, inability to approach anything,
yeah.
Any one of the things that actually needs to be approached. Dealing with an employer, dealing with government issues, all those things that we all face on a daily basis, but it just becomes overwhelming for some people.
Yeah.
And he'll call me up and talk to me, and I'll help him try to pare it down to, I use the analogy, how do you eat an elephant? One bite
piece
at a time,
yeah.
right? So let's look at this and decide what you can deal with right now
right.
and deal with that and just put the other stuff in the back of the drawer. Mm-hmm. And once this is taken care of, we'll open mm-hmm. the drawer up again
right.
and take the next thing out, decide what the next thing to deal with is, and you can deal with that. Don't let them all exist in one place at one time mm-hmm. because you're going to become so overcome, you won't be able to deal with any of them.
Right.
And
that's just feel too heavy sometimes.
Certainly
yeah.
not the point.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah, even like you said, even talking to a friend or a family mm-hmm. member can help you sort out the priorities of things you need to do. Or just looking at your perspective on things, go, well, that's not really a good perspective because you're not thinking of X or Y right. or Z.
Yeah.
And that can be really helpful too. I mean, I so many times talking to people in the program and have said something, you know, that's bothering me, and they'll say like, well, what do you have against this? And I'm like, I don't have anything against this. Oh, yeah, you do. You just said blah, blah, blah. That clearly shows that you know, have a bias against this or that. And it's like, oh, yeah, I guess I do. So, you know, yeah, having people help you sort things mm-hmm. is really important.
Yeah.
And they talk about life structure. They say like a job or school. For some people, that's not necessarily an option right away. For example, you're coming out of prison and you need to just learn how to refunction as a healthy human being in a society. you can build structure for that too. I'm going to look for a job, but in the meantime, I'm going to get up every morning at 7. I'm going to make my bed. I'm going to have something to eat. I'm going to go for a long walk. And then at 10 o'clock in the morning, I'm going to go down to the Latah Recovery Center. I'll talk to some people there. I'll maybe get some literature to read. I'll work on my job search on their computers that they let me use for free.
Yep.
And then, you know, at 1 o'clock, I'll go have some lunch, maybe go on another walk, try and return some phone calls. Designing a structure for yourself is not all that difficult. And it, you know, it doesn't have to be just a job. Although that's, I mean, obviously that's a good thing. But if you can't work or you're in a situation where you're not working, that can be something good. Mm-hmm. I remember after getting fired for the umpteenth time for drinking or alcohol-related issues, I had a lot of downtime. And all I did in that downtime was just sit in the pity pot and woe is me and drink more to try and get over, discuss with myself the, you know, my failings, my moral failing, all those things I thought about myself before I got into recovery, just being a loser. And you can't live in that. It's not healthy.
It's not. I personally find a routine for, you know, a reason to get up and get on with my day is actually really helpful. For me, it's, you know, making sure my kiddos get to school in the morning before I need to go to work. And during the summertime, I got to be honest, you know, I don't have to be to work until 9. And so that's when I get to work. And then during the wintertime, when I'm dropping off kids or getting them to school, I'm to work 45 minutes early, which is actually kind of nice, you know. Mm. But I do push that line. And so I know for me that it's good to have that structure, or I would just kind of lounge around and not be productive, you know.
Right.
And I've had to work on my weekends as well, making sure that I know, like, okay, so I can sleep in a little bit, but I still need to get to things and, like, you know, planning that out better as well, because there have been in the past where I just kind of got nothing done and then I wasn't prepared for my week, you know?
Right.
I think it's a good thing. I like the example that you gave about ways to make your day structured, even if you're looking for work or you're not working. It is good.
Right.
Yeah. Fill your day with good things that support you well.
That's right. That's right. Those are simple things that you can always do for free.
Right.
Basically for free.
Yeah. And I like that making your bed in the morning. That's been something that I've been hearing since early in recovery, when I actually attended both NA and AA, because of a program that I was in. I needed to make sure that I had a meeting a day. And so I would go on the weekends as well. And I thought that was really good advice. So I got to be honest, though. I try to make my bed so that it's, like, actually easy to make in the morning.
Right.
Yeah. Not complicated or anything.
Yeah. My first sponsor used to have me, he said, store your big book underneath your bed. So when you get up in the morning to get your big book while you're down on your knees, you know, go ahead and, you know, say a prayer.
Right.
So, and that was part of my early structure as well. You know, that's little cool suggestions like that.
Yep.
Well, moving on,
yeah.
They talk about establishing a self-care plan. This involves cultivating your mental, emotional, and physical well-being and developing coping skills. It's important to have one non-negotiable self-care tool that you use daily. And I think when they're talking about non-negotiable, it's something that you can't put off till tomorrow. And it might be as simple as bathing. Believe it or not, it's a important self-care tool.
It is.
To having good personal hygiene is important. It's also important to people that are going to be around you. Smelling like something a dog rolled in is not.
It's not favorable for other people.
You're right.
Yeah.
Not rewarding.
Nope.
But it can also be as complex as I'm going to spend an hour in meditation at some point in the day or at a specific point in the day, and not saying, I'm going to skip that today because I'm going to church. No, if you make it a non-negotiable point, that means you can't excuse yourself out of it. So I do think that's important. And you talk about mental, emotional, and physical. It can also be that walk. That I have a neighbor who every 2 hours he works from home, and every 2 hours he gets up and he walks about a half a mile. And quite often I join him. He'll send me a text and say, hey, I'm coming by your place, so I'll walk with him. And it's just his way of forcing himself to get up, get out, get away from the computer, and you know, not just sit there and snack or whatever he does. I don't know exactly, but it allows him to know that, okay, I've got a break coming up.
And you get your blood flowing. That's good. Wakes you up.
Right. Yeah. Get your blood flowing. You know, if you sit to work all day, you end up fat like me. So it's you know, exercise is good for your physical as well.
Yep. Just being outside, fresh air. Looking at the trees or whatever your environment is, I feel like that really is good. I became a non-smoker over 6 years ago, and so I don't sit outside as much as I used to, which I kind of miss. So I have to be a little bit intentional with you know, noticing as I'm walking to move my car or whatever it is.
Right.
Yeah, or on the weekends going to do things. Yeah.
Right, right.
I have a great view off my back patio. Not as cool as yours and your wife's view, but ding dang, it's pretty cool over there.
That was a blessing for sure.
Really?
Beautiful view of Moscow Mountain and the north side of Moscow.
Because the sun sets down towards Pullman, and so it just works out really well. Yeah. I see it a little bit, but not as cool as what you and your wife have going on. Good job.
Someday, Denise.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I did grow up in the Valley of the Sun, so I saw a lot of really cool sunsets just in general. So,
yeah, I have a friend who lives down in Arizona, and she will occasionally send a photograph of a sunrise or a sunset down there from the Phoenix area, and it's pretty cool.
It's pretty spectacular.
Yeah, Valley of the Sun. They call it that for a reason.
They do.
Oh, and you're also cultivating your emotional well-being. You know, that can be reading, spending time reading affirmations. There's a lot of great books out there with positive affirmations in it. We used to have a class here called Positive Affirmations.
We did.
I don't know whatever happened to that.
Well, the gal that was leading it, I kind of took over after she left, and then we've had some other things come along since then, so... Mm. Yeah.
But it's sort of thing that you don't necessarily need to do in a group because, like I said, there are so many good books out there that have affirmations in it. There's an AA book called As Bill Sees It that's really good, has a lot of good little pointers in it. And there's another publication that's put out by AA that some groups use, actually a group right here in town, Saturday morning, 10 o'clock at St. Mark's Church, called the Emotional Sobriety Meeting. And they work out of a book that is stories about emotional sobriety that came from the AA Grapevine, which is their little magazine. They call it a meeting in print, but it's a monthly magazine. And these books are just loaded with stories, people's stories about emotional sobriety, emotional welfare, you know, how they take care of it, what it means to them. So, I mean, there's an option right there. If you're in recovery, that's a real good one to look for. But don't discount religious affirmation books as well.
Yeah, I was going to say that I learned years back that there are promises, God's promises in the Bible, and you can Google what kinds you're looking for. There's been times where I've needed scriptures on provision or just different kinds of things, you know, things to help me with fear or anxiety that I was struggling with. and then I find which ones resonate well with me, and I write them down, and then I look at those to, you know, reassure myself and stand on God's word, because that is true. And then there's also things like, we talked about this last weekend at Restoration Group for Leadership, and that was how to do declarations. And our words are really powerful, and so we just kind of need to keep in mind that, you know, like, are we speaking words of life or death over ourselves or others? And for us who are faith-based, you know, we carry the Holy Spirit as well. And God spoke the world into existence, as it speaks of in Genesis. And so given that we have a little part of that, it really matters. And I honestly think, regardless, even if you don't have faith or whatever your beliefs are in that area, I still think that your words really matter to what you tell yourself and to what you say to others. I think that's pretty universal. And also, you know, has to do with the wiring that's in your brain, the things that you're saying to yourself and how you're treating yourself. And I feel like that also falls under your self-care. I mean, if you're finding yourself just squirreling around about horrible things, maybe about yourself or others, I mean, for me, I would kind of look at that a little bit and be like, is there anything in there that's valid that I need to work on or address or have a conversation about or get help with? But when I start to kind of do that resentment cycle or whatever that looks like, I just, you know, take a look real quick. Is there anything there? Set it all down and then start thinking about what is actually the truth. You know, like, am I living in fear? What am I living in fear about? You know, and then I look to God's word and, you know, rest in that I don't have to worry and that I'm not doing this life on my own. He loves my kids. I love my kids, you know, same, you know, just that reassurance that the world is just not all on my shoulders. And then I also remember that if I'm frustrated with somebody or feeling bitter, that there's also a process that I've been taught through God's word in working on that and forgiveness and stuff. And I always remember that forgiving someone does not mean that, you know, you're reconciling with them. So,
right.
You know, but you set things down, you know, I set things down.
Right. Yeah. And seeing is believing, as they say. So yeah. if you set them down, you know, much like our AA fourth step where we write our resentments down.
Right.
Actually seeing them written down in front of you can make all the difference in the world and how you look at them and how you process them.
Yeah.
The next item is one that's really fascinating to me. It's trusting the process of recovery. This means not giving up and taking one small step at a time. It includes a belief that healing is possible and you can move forward. And when I came into AA, I was pretty sure I was never going to have fun again, because everything I had done up to that point, you know, for the bulk of my adult life at that time, had involved some sort of substance or alcohol, mostly alcohol. So I could not see past the fact that if I don't have alcohol anymore, how am I going to be able to enjoy life?
Right.
You know, everybody drinks. Well, not really true, but, you know, the crowd I ran with, you know, it was the sort of thing. And a lot of them were like normal, temperate, three-drink people that I don't understand. But they could have fun on that. For me, it just wasn't that way. So when they told me that it's going to get better and that at some point, you know, your compulsion to drink will be removed. In retrospect, I believe it already had. And I was, you know, mourning the loss of my best friend, alcohol. So it was really hard for me to, quote, trust the process and believe that I could get better and learn how to live life on life's terms, which is really what I needed, not just to stop drinking. You know, putting down the bottle is the easy part. It's learning how to live life and deal with situations and develop coping skills without alcohol for the crutch. So it was hard for me to trust that it was going to work. A lot of people take a glance at AA when, you know, when they're struggling with alcohol and they go, well, that won't work for me. You know, or they come into a meeting and look at the wall and look at the 12 steps and look at that, make amends to people wherever possible. And they're like, I'm never doing that. Not with this person or that person. Mm-hmm. And so their trust in the process goes away. They may have had an experience, a religious experience where, you know, like mine, where God was this awful, punishing, horrible, judging beast of a deity. And they see, you know, turn our will and our lives over to God as we understand, well, I'm not doing that because the God I know is not a good guy or gal or whatever. So it destroys trust in the process. It makes it harder to build trust mm-hmm. in the process, that if I just go along with it and behave as if I believe it, that there will be, you know, there's light at the other end of the tunnel, and eventually I'll be able to trust the process.
I do want to say that you should share how you do have a little bit different of a view of that spiritual wounding that you have, that you had.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've had some different experiences over mm-hmm. time as far as with faith and mm-hmm. that stuff. So it's not
right.
the same. Because from me knowing you a little bit, it sounded like as you were sharing experiences over the years from your youth about going to church or experiencing people of faith, that it was very negative. It was people that made it so negative, not
right.
necessarily that it was God that made it so negatively.
Right, right. It was how the message was presented. It was looking and believing that the church was the people that were in it, which is not true. I mean, the true church of Jesus Christ is the people that believe and the people that want to walk the walk that Jesus prescribed. Yeah, you know, at 16, of course, I knew everything, of course.
Oh, I did too. I think I started knowing everything at about like 12, I mean.
Right, exactly.
And
well,
at
women,
16, I mean.
Girls do mature faster than boys.
Do.
That's
yeah.
that's a fact.
Gosh, at 16, I was in the prime of my thinking I was all that, and I knew everything everyone else didn't, and how could they do that? I would
right.
never do that. That didn't work out well for me, I just want to say.
Yeah, right.
I think I oopsed on all those things. That's what
right.
happens when you're judgy.
Right, right.
Doesn't work out well, at least for me.
Right. So you know, seeing you know, seeing the people and their foibles and failings and whatnot, and you know, the message being presented is, here are the things that you have to do, and if you don't, you're going to burn.
Yeah,
that does not set somebody up. You know,
no.
I did not want to deal with a fear-based relationship with God. I figured best just to abandon him, go about my business, and just figure I'm going to burn, and I'll worry about that when it comes.
Man.
You know, one of those, I'll put it off. You know, I was a very mañana guy. I'll worry about it mañana.
It's later Johnny's problem.
Yeah, yeah. yeah. And,
it's a future
and, yeah,
Johnny's problem.
Turns out it was, but...
Yeah, in a different way.
Yeah, but getting introduced to, you know, a spiritual way of looking at things, and then being able to go back through... going back to the Christian teachings through a friend who is well-educated, very much a true believer, and was able to present these things to me relative to where I am and where he is in life. Because we shared our youth together, so we have a lot of common ground between us. That made the difference for me. That's mm-hmm. what brought me back into a state where, you know, I could believe, you know, that there's a God out there that loves me and wants me to be happy. Mm-hmm. And all I have to do is just ask for what should I do to be able to be happy.
That's awesome. I'm personally grateful for that person too. So I'm glad that 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 person could walk wrong alongside of you. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you knew them for a little while, and so there's some trust built. And I think that that's actually where there is something, a really important element that I've noticed and believe as I consider sharing things with people, and that is, what kind of relationship do we have? I mean, right. I absolutely love the people who can just like preach the gospel to mm-hmm. the, you know, the clerk or the person through the McDonald's driveway. That's great, mm-hmm. you know, for sure. And maybe I could do that too. But just being able to sit and speak with somebody when the timing seems right about whatever specifically is going on for them and sharing something mm-hmm. seems a little bit more natural and organic to me to be able to do that. But I really do. I think it's very key, especially if someone's slightly resistant or if they have that spiritual wounding, that it's done in a way mm-hmm. where there's that relationship, like that you actually cared what your friend had to say. Yeah. It sounds like,
right.
like you respected him and knew mm-hmm. him and knew that he like cared about you and had good intentions
right,
with you.
Right.
So then your mind is open to trusting somebody who, you know, you have that with
right.
instead of somebody who's just up at the pulpit or
right.
Susie Q around the corner,
right.
you know, saying
exactly.
something. Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's a big difference. Yeah.
Oddly enough, this guy was also my drug dealer at one point.
You know,
so
lots of things happen.
It shows you that things can turn around.
My mom used to say that something about like Jesus loves or cares for or shows up well or something like that for children and alcoholics. So, I mean,
right. Right.
There you go.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Well, there is a patron saint for drunks and sailors. Actually, I thought it was St. Patrick. Hmm. But no, I don't think that's it. I think he's patron saint for children and anyway.
Yeah. So just for the listening audience, you know, this is very organic. We have a slight script when we start about maybe our topic or whatever, and then we just go whichever way. And I'm personally a verbal processor, so I mean, you know,
right.
Johnny does try to like think things through before he speaks, but then he has me and I'm just like squirrel. So thanks for letting me squirrel a little.
Well, and I do occasionally will come down with a case of oral diarrhea, but
right.
I try and keep that to a minimum.
This is a, you know, we have a recovery of, you know, all sorts of imperfections. There's nothing perfect about us. We're very flawed and we're okay with that.
Right.
That keeps us from making bad choices for ourselves.
That's right. And you know, part of the AA program is rigorous honesty. So
yeah.
we can say that about ourselves and, you know, be honest about it and, you know, stand corrected graciously.
Absolutely.
Because I don't necessarily have all the answers. And some of the answers I have may be wrong. And I'm willing to accept that mm-hmm. and be re-educated and then make amends for any damage I might have done there.
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny. We've gotten
some practice with that.
Yes. We've actually kind of moved into the next topic, which is finding mm-hmm. your community,
yes.
Connecting with others who can provide support. This can include support groups, clubs, and other social circles. And certainly, you know, relating to friends and neighbors, you know, being part of a church group, if you find one that fits your needs, you know, that can be tremendous. The AA family that I have, I call them the family I chose rather than the one I was born with. Mm-hmm. I got an email or a text today from a fellow who he was down here working on the big highway project south of town, mm-hmm. and he was here for 3-4 years mm-hmm. while that project was going on, and you know during the summer when they were working on it, and he became a regular member of one of our groups, and you know the project was done. It was time for him to go back to northern Montana, where he's connected with AA there, and he has AA family there. But it was really sad to see him go. And in texting this morning, he's like, "So what's going on with the group? And you know, I really miss you guys." And you know, I'm texting back, "Yeah, no, same old, and you know, we all really miss you." And you know, I'm glad I'm staying connected with you. And I even, he even said, you know, I might try and come back down, but You know, it'll depend if I can get a motel room. I'm like, you don't need a motel room. I've got an Airbnb in my house. Yeah. You just show up with your, you know, a change of clothes.
You're good to go.
You're more than welcome to stay here and go hit some meetings and, you know, have a good one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are other things too. You know, there are clubs, there are social gatherings that it's important to get into, because I can be so tightly connected to my AA group that I don't look outside of it for growth, which is important.
Yeah.
You know, doing volunteer work here at the recovery center, which I don't do nearly as much as I used to, but just being here, just coming in, talking to people, being part of things that my wife is interested in doing. I go 2 days a week to a water aerobics class, and that's a whole outside group of people that I'm getting to know. And
that's cool.
Some of them I've known for a while, but, you know, getting to know them and you know, we'll see what kind of relationships develop out of that. But it's good because it gets me outside of my comfort zone. I like a small, tidy world that's easy for me to figure out, but that's not the whole world. So I need to be involved in those things as well. Mm-hmm. Like you doing your Toastmasters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super.
I'm sure that was a huge kind of a step for you.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. And part of the reason why I was able to take that step was because some of the people that I know from Restoration Night and Church are there. So I feel a little bit more comfortable going up and basically embarrassing myself. and then I got over that too. So that was good. But it was something important to me. And it was interesting because I remember other leaders giving lessons at Celebrate Recovery that had taken Toastmasters. And so has my good friend. And they did such an amazing job. And I would ask, oh, so that was like so good. And they would be like, oh yeah, I took Toastmasters for a couple of years. So in my brain, I was like, I remembered. And then when that got brought up, I was like, I really want to participate in that. That sounds really good. So it's been a good experience. But there are people that I haven't met before that are there, which is really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, right. And like I said, you know, just getting outside of your comfort zone a little bit.
Did I get way outside my comfort zone with that?
Because you might find things that you actually enjoy.
Yeah.
You know, join a club that, you know, you share an interest in, a book club, a knitting club, a shooting club, you know, whatever tickles your fancy, and you'll be able to find other people like yourself, so you can start a relationship based on common, you know, common interest. I ran into a fellow the other day. I went to my friend's farm. He lives in Boston, but has a farm out here that no one's living in right now after his dad passed away. And it needs attention from time to time to be checked on. And I went and checked on it, and his neighbor came rolling up, and he's like, hey, hi, who are you? Mm-hmm. Why are you here? And I told him, and it was all good. And while we were talking, I had noticed there was a car underneath a car cover, in his driveway that I have to pass to go up to the farmhouse. And I said, what do you got underneath there? And it's a dragster. It's a, you know, his home build Camaro dragster with a giant motor, and he's telling me all the specs on it, and I'm kind of a little bit of a motorhead, and I understood good part of it, but you know, he was like willing to give me his phone number, and you know, hey, you know, when I you know, change it out, I'll give you a call and come check it out. And I was like, great. So, I mean, those opportunities can present themselves, mm-hmm. If you just let yourself kind of lean into them a little bit.
Yeah.
And the last one here, because I know you want to talk a little bit about Thanksgiving as well, mm-hmm. Expanded self-awareness and intuition. This pillar focuses on learning about your strengths and challenges and learning to trust your inner voice and gut feelings. My inner voice and gut feelings for me now come from my higher power. come from God, because I was told a long time ago, your first thought in any situation is for entertainment purposes only, because they usually involve like violence or other bad decisions. So, yeah, and it says in the big book, we will intuitively know how to handle things that used to baffle us.
Yeah.
And that, for me, that all comes down to not just self-awareness. I mean, of course, it's important to understand your limitations. I am obviously, with my bad back, not a great candidate to help you move your height a bit.
Gosh, and neither am I, apparently.
Right. Yeah. You know, and also if you need, if you have a pain in your back that's been bothering you for weeks, I'm not the guy to go to diagnose it. But I can be the guy who says, yeah, you probably should go see somebody about that.
Yeah, I think we can both relate to going to see a doctor to check things out. Crikey.
Yeah. We have a good friend whose wife finally had this thing going on his neck, and it wasn't bothering him. But his wife's like, you need to go get that checked out. Well, it was cancer. And he just got done with his 12 weeks of radiation and chemo, and he got the ring to bell last week, and it should be fine. Of course, they got to do some more testing, some more scans and stuff to see how well it did. But I mean, he lived with it for like 6 months before his wife finally laid down the law and said, you need to go. Mm-hmm. And it's a good thing he did, because, you know, had he waited much longer, the outcome
future him
could have been,
wouldn't have been
very
good,
different.
And that, but and again,
but it was her intuition that said
right. No. And that's why we need other people around us to be able to speak into our lives. Mm-hmm. You know, again, people that we trust and that know us. And
sure. And if you have a gut feeling about something, I had a gut feeling about a friend of mine who. I just had this feeling he was struggling with something, because the way he was behaving, but he insisted, no, everything was great. Mm-hmm. And I finally just kind of pushed a little harder, and he broke down, and, you know, he was going to have to declare bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And he was super upset about it. That's and, hard. You know, he was going to lose a business, and, you know, I just asked him, why did you not want to talk about it before? And he said, well, it's embarrassing. And I, you know, and I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I totally get it. I've been there. I've done that. But, you know, keeping it all bundled in like that, he's also in recovery. I mean, that's the highway to hell right there.
Yeah.
You know, holding that kind of stuff in, it's good to talk about it. So, you know, having that trust your inner voice and that says, I need to talk to somebody about this, go with it. Go talk to people. Do stuff like that.
Yeah. And that's kind of the thing, is I think that there's definitely a culture of being able to be vulnerable and share hard things in recovery, at least all the recovery places that I have been. And I think that also sets the tone for other people to feel more comfortable sharing the things that they're struggling with. So be a part of setting that tone, you know? I mean, it shows that we're all human, you know, and we all show up in different ways. And it's nice to be able to just get things out of your brain and say them out loud.
That's right.
It's very helpful.
And before we close it down, you had some thoughts about this wonderful Thanksgiving holiday all going to enjoy.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the other week I wrote, I was the Toastmaster at Toastmasters, which means I kind of ran the meeting, and I did a little blurb that I was going to try to find, but it's okay. I'll just talk about it. Unless, of course, you want me to read it. I can go either way.
Go ahead and read it.
Okay,
you
so
read
just
it
pause
to me
us
once,
for a
and
second.
I really liked it.
So it was a little reading that I did. It says, good evening, fellow Toastmasters and guests. As the air turns crisp and the pumpkin spice takes over every coffee shop in America, we know Thanksgiving is right around the corner. Common Thanksgiving traditions include gathering for large feasts with roasted turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, and pumpkin pie, and of course whipped cream. It's that time of year when second helpings and just one more bite are particularly required. One of the most beloved Thanksgiving traditions is the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade, a celebration that has been going strong for nearly a century. Giant balloons float through the streets of New York City while families across the country watch from home, coffee in hand, making the official start of the holiday season. For others, the day revolves around football. Whether it's cheering for your favorite team on TV or heading outside for that friendly game of football that somehow always gets a little bit competitive. And of course, there's always dessert, and that's its own event in itself. Thanksgiving reminds us to pause and appreciate the blessings around us, good food, good company, and moments like these where we can share and stay connected. And... oh, I skipped a part. Let me just read this last little tidbit. Before a meal, many families take a moment to share what they are thankful for. It's a simple yet powerful tradition, reminding us that gratitude is what truly fills the table. Thanks.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it was just really fun to get to hear. So like there were the table topic questions had to do with, you know, favorite Thanksgiving traditions. And I personally really, really like cranberry sauce with all the goodies. I have to have cranberry sauce. If people aren't going to have it, then I bring my own. But I have to have cranberry sauce and pumpkin pie with whipped cream. Yep.
I had a friend we invited for Thanksgiving, and my wife had not the traditional canned cranberry sauce, but like a homemade version. It was really good. And our friend kept looking at it, and he goes, "That's not cranberry sauce." And I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "It's supposed to be shaped like a cylinder and have lines
that's
in it gels. From the can."
Yeah, that's gelled. Yeah. They're all good.
It's all
I like
good.
The gelled kind too, actually, but I just mush it up with other stuff.
So yeah, there you go. And it's great on a cold turkey sandwich the next day.
Oh, thanks for that reminder too. Well, we do hope that you're all enjoying your Thanksgiving festivities and food and pie and football or parades or whatever it is that you like to do for your traditions with your friends, families, or recovery groups, whatever that looks like.
That's right. And, you know, thank you for letting us be a part of your Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And we'll be back next week. And hopefully, God willing, and all that good stuff, we'll have more good contact with you. In a couple of weeks, we're going to have Dr. Valerie Russo back on. Just make contact with her, and we'll be set to go. So be ready for that. And I'll close it off with the regular. You know, if you think you have a problem with alcohol or other substances or, you know, mental health issues, you do.